position number 21186, row 4.
Mr. Jenkins, row 4.
And the gunners were all set up to shell Podgorica, and then they were stopped the last minute. And they'd been getting on fine with the partisan leaders in the local hotel, but the commissars stepped in and they had to come all the way back without firing a shot. And on another occasion, we were stationed at Nixich, and the sappers had prepared the bridge to be blown up in case the Germans advanced up that particular exit route. And then we were switched further west on the story that the Germans were planning a move south from Mostar. But of course that never materialized, and we were stuck out there, sitting out in the hillside with nothing happening at all. And this was in winter. This was the winter of 44. So we had appalling climatic conditions, and we were just in bivouacs, because the people in Montenegro are peasant stock, and we couldn't go into their houses, and we couldn't pinch wood because they needed it and so forth. So it was pretty rough, and we packed our kit bags with greatcoats in them, and they never caught up with us. And we just had to put up with pretty difficult climatic conditions. Oh, but there was another instance, yes, too. I went into one peasant cottage and was chatting away to the housewife in there, and a couple of partisans came in, and she looked absolutely terror-struck. And these partisans carried out an absolutely thorough search of the house, and fortunately they didn't find anything, so I didn't get involved. I'd only picked up the basic Serbo-Croat words, so I didn't know what was actually going on. But of course in Montenegro there were a lot of Serbs, and they'd been royalist, and they'd joined the Chetniks, and the communists were as intent on eliminating the Chetniks as royalists as they were on, in fact even more so than shooting Germans. So her husband must have been a Chetnik up in the hills, and they were searching for him. And on one, as we were approaching Nixich once, we were winding round the mountain road, and I saw a couple of people stripped to the waist. This was, as I say, in winter, and I thought, that's pretty hardy. And they were digging. Well, I thought, gosh, that's pretty hardy sort of stuff. And then we came round the bend again, and a couple of people stepped forward, and I saw some arms come up, and then these people fell down forward. And what had happened was that the communists, the partisans, had got hold of a couple of Chetniks, and they'd got them to dig their own graves, executed them, and the villagers would have to dig up those graves to find out who'd been killed. I mean, that was the sort of situation you had in Yugoslavia. So it's absolutely tragic that these atrocities have never had more than a generation to be forgotten about, and they never have been forgotten about. So it's a tragic situation in the Balkans.
So, as far as you were concerned, you and your comrades were in these terrible living conditions in Montenegro.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Well, eventually we pushed the guns through And they did open up on the convoys that were held up. But again, that's absolutely tragic, you know, the loss of life, so unnecessary, really. It's all very well for these generals, you know, they're organizing the numbers and so forth. But we actually see what happens on the ground, and that's not so good. But in that, towards that end of the phase, we were able to do something constructive. I don't know much about animals, but my troop commander was told he had to recce for a possible raid to blow up a bridge at Biochi, which would have disrupted the main retreat route that they'd been forced into. We'd blocked the other two. And I thought, oh God, he's going to have a hell of a time. It's going to take him 3 days to get across there over the mountains. So I said, oh, well, all the very best. And he very casually said, oh, by the way, there's 50 mules turning up tomorrow. You've got to take some rations out to an LRDG patrol. And he gave me the map reference. Then he wished me luck. And fortunately, there were a couple of excellent Italians. There was an Italian vet with the mules and a couple of muleteers. So we had one morning's briefing on how to saddle up and how to halter and deal with the mules. And then off we went into the Bundu. And in those days, they were just Cyrillic maps, and very badly produced at that, you know, and about 30 years old. We had about 30 miles to go. And we came to one little footbridge, and Sergeant George was having trouble with his mule. Couldn't get him across. So eventually he turned up on the other side. And I said, how did you manage that, Sergeant George? Well, he said, I noticed he was lame in his back leg, and I gave him a kick in it, and he went over it. And there was another Marine who had trouble with his mule that broke away, and it dumped a couple of ration boxes, and he ended up having to carry ration boxes to get back to his mule to reload it. But we got to the LRDG, and they were very pleased to have the rations, and they liked to have a chat because they hadn't seen other British forces for some time. And then we were withdrawn to Dubrovnik, and that's when we really had trouble because they wouldn't allow us into the town. And frontline troops don't like having to just keep away, and it was very difficult indeed, and they kept on arresting our men and charging them being drunk or this, that and the other, and it was very difficult.
You mean just on a pretext?
Yeah, and they made, you know, they're doing everything else, everything to, they didn't want us in the country at that stage. I had to negotiate with one of the brigadiers over the release of one of my men, and I had to try and persuade him not to contact the communist authorities and make a big issue of it. So we were talking in French, because I couldn't speak Serbo-Croat and he wasn't really good at English, but we managed to sort it out.
Which month would this have been, do you think?
This was early January, 45. And we were brought back to Italy then. And that's the first bit of leave I had, about a couple of days in Bari. But then we were packed on to troop trains and taken up north. And Complete contrast, we were pushed into the front line, which had been static through the winter. And we were in the extreme eastern sector, south of Lake Comacchio. And we had all this First World War stuff there. They tunneled through the embankments on the side of the Reno, and we had dugouts, and the Germans were 30 yards away and done the same thing on the other bank.
30 yards away?
Yeah, just the width of the river. And, you know, it was real First World War stuff. You patrolled at night. Well, there were two sectors, actually, that we went to. One was a bit further inland, and there we had to patrol up to their frontline positions. And that's what we were doing most of the time. And we were patrolling because that was the area where we were going to open up the 8th Army's first attack, the spring offensive. And ours was the curtain raiser to capture the extreme right flank by the Adriatic to try and make the Germans think that we were going for Venice, whereas they were going for a breakthrough a bit further inland. So that's when we did a lot of patrolling in the area.
How did you like doing that?
Well, actually, I quite enjoyed that. It was quite exciting stuff. And on one patrol, I had to find out, this was where we were going to attack, I had to find out if there was a minefield in a particular area and what the enemy strength was, if I could, and so forth. So Neil Munro had to brief me on doing this. He was the second in command. I could tell he wasn't very keen on it. He thought he was going to lose another officer because I was very young still and prone to take a chance. Anyway, he briefed me with aerial photos and maps and things, and off we went. And I cut some telephone wires. I discovered that they'd had to one of their forward OPs. And then we got to the end of this field, and there wasn't a minefield. But again, it's eerie stuff going over it for the first time. And so I decided to recce a bit further forward. And I could hear a bit of coughing. But I went to a bank, and there was a little lane there. So I went over to the left, and I discovered a dugout, which wasn't occupied. Fortunately for me. So it had some machine guns there and the Panzerfaust and that sort of thing. So we brought that back as booty from the slit trench. And on the way back we found some mortar sites, some German mortar sites. And we were able to report that there wasn't a great deal of strength there. And the next day the CO said, well, that's been quite a good patrol from E Troop, and I expect several Germans are up on charges for losing their equipment. And then, of course, we had the real thing, which was a pucker-supported brigade attack. There were four commandos in the brigade, and 40 commando took over our positions along the Reno. And our job was to clear a spit of land at the mouth, just to the west of the mouth of the Reno, where it bent up north. And HR was supposed to be at 12 o'clock. So, oh yes, they'd provided us with some buffaloes, and we'd had a bit of practice with these. These are amphibious water machines, you know, troop carriers that will take across, and they'd also made some Sherman tanks amphibious, and what was the name of the other little ones, Bren gun carriers, Wasps and things that they made amphibious for us to get across the mouth of the Rena. So we were in our buffaloes waiting to go off, and this was, you know, sort of again First World War stuff. And once you get there, you're anxious to get away. But D-Day, HR came and nothing happened. And what had been planned was for 2 Commando and 9 Commando to go across in amphibious craft across the shallow Lake Camacho and attack the inside flank of the spit of land, which wasn't fortified as much as the coast might have been. But they'd had terrible problems because there'd been less rainfall that winter and the lake level had fallen a bit. So they got bogged down and took hours longer to get anywhere near to the shoreline than had been planned for. Anyway, Ronnie Todd, who was the brigadier, decided that since people were committed, he'd better go through with the attack. So we did get the go-ahead just before dawn. But by that time, you see, our forward troops had left their positions and gone forward, and they were just beginning to retreat because they didn't want to be caught in the open before the Germans spotted them. Anyhow, that was turned round, and the attack went ahead, and we cleared this spit that we had to do first, and then came the crossing of the Reno, and E Troop had to cross furthest up, nearest the sea, where it was broadest. And the driver of our buffalo must have got his gears locked or something, because we got into the river and then we did a slow semicircle, it was light by this time, around in the river. PC was furious, but I saw the funny side of it. However, fortunately, again, only Spandau's opened up on us. And this chap sorted himself out a bit, but we came in at an angle to the bank, and of course an estuary of the river, between banks there was silt, and it was almost, it was right up to the thigh, and we were very heavily laden once again with all our full complement of ammunition, so we went in up to the thigh. And the other snag was that the Churchill tanks, which were supposed to give us close supporting fire, the tank commander, decided that his amphibious stuff wasn't good enough, because one of the Shermans that had been going up had stopped and hadn't been able to go forward. So there we were. We found ourselves on the other side of the Riverino, completely flat floodplain, and we had to take the positions, built-in positions, gun positions, on the higher ground beyond the floodplain, with absolutely no support from close support. But given their due, the artillery was magnificent. And as we went forward over this open plain, we had this curtain of shells coming in front of us. Absolutely marvelous. We've never seen a thing like this in Yugoslavia, because we'd had to rely on just our heavy weapons troop. To see this curtain of shells, and not a shot was fired at us. And that was just as well, because there were these ditches that had been put in to drain the low-lying land. And again, each time we had to go in thigh deep to get across each ditch. And one of my chaps, McMasters, had the unfortunate job of carrying a life buoy flamethrower, which is a pig of a load, on his back, in addition to his equipment and everything else. And he got stuck. So we were going forward. PC told me to go back and bring on the stragglers so that nobody got left behind. So I discovered McMaster's here, and this is where Achna Carey came in, because I was able to give him a hand and heave him out, and he very gamely doubled forward and kept up with us. But that's where your one's basic training did help, you know, and in any exercise, one had been taught right flanking, left flanking, fire and movement, so one had something to pin one's hat onto, and something to get on with every time. And we had a forward observation officer with us, a gunner, so that as we got close to the positions, he brought down smoke instead of HE, and the barrage lifted, and we went over the positions, and then, of course, we were able to take them from the rear, and they all came out with their hands up once we commanded the entrances to their dugouts from the rear. And we cleared all the bank of the Reno, the whole of the sector that we were supposed to clear. And then, this was took all morning, of course, and we took a lot of prisoners, and we were getting a bit depleted then because we'd had the odd casualty, and one had to have one or two Marines to take the prisoners back to be looked after and so forth. So we were getting quite short of numbers. And then we got an order that we had to take all the objectives were given Bible names. And we had to take Leviticus, which was in nine commando sector, that they, in the original plan, they should have taken it. But they'd met all this difficulty and they'd met particularly strong fire on their first objective after being held up and having to do a dawn landing. So we weren't best pleased when we had to take one of their objectives, but obviously, I mean, it was only because of lack of communication. We didn't know what had happened. So we went up again, three troops up, and gunner support, which was very good, and went over the objective and took them from the rear again. And then most of the commando moved on north to two bridges across the Bolocchio Canal, which was the next phase of the advance. But in E Troop, we were told we had to go down and clear the remaining dugouts along the Reno that a troop from 40 Commando had been scheduled to do. But again, they'd lost their tank support, had been bogged down, and they'd had trouble from frontal fire down there. So when the rest of the commando went off, we slogged back, but we were fortunate, of course, and we could see the routes through the minefields at this stage, because the Germans had left the wire along it. So we actually had a much easier task, and we again were able to take the dugouts from the rear. So we handed over the prisoners to 40 Commando, and then we had this long slog through the night to get back to the commando, because we'd been on the go we hadn't had any sleep the night before, and we'd been on the go the whole day, and we had to get up to these bridges. Halfway up the next part of the objective. But we got there, but my God, we were really tired by the time we got there.
And the next thing?
Well, the next day we had to probe forward and see if there was a chance of the brigade going following right through to cross the next canal, which was the big canal. That's where we caught trouble. We were advancing forward, and spread out on the flat plain. This time, the Spandaus opened up from the far side of the canal, and this was where one of our Marine Corporal got the VC, because he saw what was happening. And he ran forward with his Bren gun and took on the Spandaus, whilst the rest of his troop were able to get forward. But inevitably, of course, he was exposed from where he was firing, and he was killed in that action.
Did you see anything of this?
Well, we were just behind. And the troop commander had been hit, and one of the Marines got back from the troop commander, and he said, we must bring Major Roberts in. So I organized a stretcher party, and just had to hope that the Germans would respect the white flag. So we tied a sheet onto a flag and went out into the open, and Skinner knew where Shorty was, so we got to him and brought him back.
What are your next memories?
Let's have a look. Then, that's right, we were withdrawn after that, and the Guards Brigade, Independent Guards Brigade, took over our positions. But we weren't out for long, because we came back again, and we were right up along this canal, about 150 yards from the German positions on the other side this time, pretty close. And it was again a matter of lying up by day and keeping a Bren gun watch, and then patrolling at night up to the line. So I always remember the guard subaltern who briefed me in the building that we were occupying, and he had a disconcerting, very loud delivery. You know, and I didn't want to get stomped. So I said, look, you're not in your London club now. For God's sake, cut the noise down a bit. He did actually talk a bit softer after that, but I always remember that. Here he was, sort of talking away in a loud voice, and there the Germans weren't all that far away. Anyway, there it was. So we held that for a time, and we were relieved by Italian partisans after that.
What impression did they make?
Not very good. We had to wake them up, and they left half their kit behind and so forth, but they were, you know, very willing people. Now, the people we were relieved by when we were in the line, I forgot to mention this, we were relieved by the Palestine Brigade, the Jewish Palestine Brigade. And, of course, they were absolutely itching to get the Germans. And whereas we'd had a sort of live and let live thing as far as possible, the Jewish Brigade had been going out on raids, you know, assault raids and so forth, and really stirred the Germans up. So that when I went back to the Kaiser again, after relieving them, we really did get stomped. And I was down in the basement of the house, and a shell hit the wall about 6 feet in front of me. And fortunately, it must have fallen on the foundations. And they were solid stone walls. The marine sitting opposite me, it split the wall in front of our eyes. And his equipment